Welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming to tonight's panel. Just wanted to introduce myself and give you announcements before the actual panel begins. I'm Jensen Ko with Financial Services Ministry, and I see many new faces as well as familiar faces, so welcome. Let me start the session with a prayer. Father God, thank you so much for bringing all of us here together tonight and giving us this incredible community. It's so unique to be able to have this discussion about work and faith integration and of all fields in trading in the middle of New York City on Friday evening. And we thank you for this wonderful opportunity. We also pray for your guidance as our moderator, panelists, and volunteers, and each member of our audience get together and be able to connect each other, and also let this time be a time of learning and growing in you as we ponder about the integration of work and faith. And lastly, let us be reminded that all our doings here may lead to us entering into Master's joy at work, as you had intended for each of us in this room. In Jesus' name we pray. Thank you. And let me introduce our moderator. Amanda Waksmith, originally from Chicago suburb, and she has a very interesting background. I don't know if you know anyone who's actually been to a seminary and have worked at a trading floor at the same time. So she has a master's in a Fuller Seminary, Bible studies in theology, and also has a master's degree from Northwestern University in statistics. Also, she studied math and English in her university, Evangel University. So very wide interest and very talented. And it was actually her idea to have this panel last year. And she spearheaded this and invited all our panelists. So we're very grateful for her. And she's currently serving as a prop equity trader at Leverage Structured Products. Amanda Waksmith.
Well, thank you for everyone for coming out on a beautiful Friday night. I know the weather is gorgeous outside, but I'm really excited about the chance to develop more community and to have the opportunity to hear all the wisdom that is aggregated amongst our panelists. Let me introduce them to you. First, we have Matt Passante. Matt has his bachelor's from West Point and spent several years in the military before earning his MBA at Columbia. He spent 4 years at Goldman Sachs in equity sales and just recently moved to Deutsche Bank. He and his wife attend Grace Redeemer in New Jersey with their three children, two girls and a boy. So he's our married panelist and have led several fellowship groups. And his wife is previously sung at Redeemer, so maybe you're familiar with their name. So yes, I was very amused when kind of putting together this panel to have, you know, woman versus men, married panelists versus single, buy side versus sell side. So I actually want to have a little bit of time at the end where we kind of have a little bit of comparative experience, kind of an intra-panel dialogue to see what everyone's, you know, interesting perspectives are from their different standpoints. Secondly, we have Inga Norton, and she is a director of structured products, mostly a mortgage and asset-backed security sales trading at UBS. She has her bachelor's in economics from Wheaton College and her MBA from the University of Chicago, so I know I have a fellow person who can appreciate Chicago with us tonight. She's been a Redeemer attendee since 2004, and she's worked at UBS since 2004 and in capital markets since 1999. Thirdly, we have Nelson Sayers. He's currently an executive director of proprietary volatility trading at UBS. He has his bachelor's and his PhD in mathematics from UVA. And he previously worked at Susquehanna, LeBrant Structured Products, and just recently moved to UBS. He's worked in finance since 1998 and started attending Redeemer at the same time when he moved to New York. And he's been involved at various points in different sports ministry to boys. So welcome to our panelists. I actually wanted to start out with kind of a question for all three panelists about basically your philosophy of work and how you view your work in finance. So it's kind of a complicated question, so if you listen carefully. How do you view your current work in trading? Do you see it as a calling from the Lord in which you are specifically challenged to transform your workplace, minister, or work to redeem economic systems in order to make them look a little more like the kingdom of God? And if so, in what ways? Do you see it simply as a neutral job in which to make a living and to be a witness at work? Or do you see it as work that is difficult to reconcile with your Christian walk, and why? And sometimes I think, coming from a trading experience myself, sometimes you may feel like all three. So If Matt, if you would start out by giving an answer to that question. It's a tough one, I know.
Yeah, I'll give a relatively brief answer, hopefully, and let me know if I skip over some of the sub questions that, you know, are more important than others. The short answer is I think yes, I view it as a way to honor and serve the Lord, and not just a calling to make money. And I don't think that's really specific to what we do here. I think that's really the way we should live as Christians, regardless of what we do, and not just at work, but at home. You know, as citizens, I think it's really a theological issue of the way that we're called to live as Christians, as followers of Christ. So believing that that's the case, I do try to, you know, obviously honor the Lord at work. I think we do need to be careful in the way that we do that, because it's a situation that you're going into the office every day and you're not, you know, standing on a street corner giving someone the gospel and you're never going to see him again. So I think you need to be strategic, and I try to be strategic in the way that, one, I live my life, and on a trading floor, as many of you probably know, you're very close to the person next to you, so you can't try to be this perfect little Christian who sits there and never does anything wrong. I find that, you know, being honest with people about my faith, about what I believe, and then it ultimately leads to a discussion of grace, because they'll see my flaws, they'll see my, you know, temper or what have you, and, you know, and I use it as an opportunity to be humble and ask for forgiveness, and you know, to try to treat people with the dignity that we believe that every individual has. And I think that that's certainly not a common thing on a trading floor. So, you know, those are just some of the things.
Good answer. So Inga, could you also reflect a little bit on the question?
Sure. Yeah, I absolutely see my job at UBS and my job in finance and my job as selling bonds as very much a calling. I feel like it's been a journey. Every career is a journey, and every step's a journey. And for me, I feel as though I can very much see the hand of the Lord guiding me from job to job, from trade to trade, sometimes from bond to bond. And so I feel like the day that Jesus doesn't want me to sell bonds will be the day I don't. But until then, I feel like it's where I'm supposed to be. And I think that the business of finance is redemptive in and of itself. I think that capital markets promote wealth. They do things that alleviate human suffering. I don't really get to see that very much. Like, my job is much more transaction-oriented, so I don't see the global things that finance does, but I think that I see a little bit of the redemption of relationships and sales, etc.
Thanks. And Nelson?
Myself, I'm a little bit in the minority here. I mean, from my perspective, it's more of a neutral job. I certainly believe, you know, first and foremost, I'm a Christian, then I'm a trader and everything else afterwards. And so in that sense, you know, I believe it is a calling from the Lord, because it just, in some sense, just beneath everything, you know, it's just so much beneath my my Christian walk. But that being said, I agree with Matt in the sense of trading floor really does give you an opportunity to reveal grace, because if you're on a trading floor, it's a pretty heated environment at times, and all of us lose our temper every once in a while, so it's good to, you know, to you know, ask for forgiveness and for people to see that you are real and you're not, you know, like everyone else, you have flaws. So you really have an opportunity to actually to reveal that grace, and the people realize you're actually a real human being. But overall, yeah, I view it more neutral, and I do it, you know, just as I would any job, essentially.
Okay, another question for Matt. In what areas do you feel you have succeeded best and worst in exhibiting your testimony through the way you live? And you kind of touched on this already, I think, in your initial answer. But if you can give us anything more in depth.
That's tough. And we got a sneak peek at these questions. giving away the secret sauce there. You know, I hate to laud myself in any way, because I don't really feel like I've done a great job in any of them. I got to admit, it's a very hard thing. I've had some opportunity to share my testimony with people, and really it's been very limited, but that's been a real blessing. And the way that you know, like we were talking about, seeing your job as a calling, really, without using the word calling, as an opportunity to serve the Lord as well as to make money, because everything we do should be to glorify and honor Him. And just to share your testimony with one or two people in the workplace is a tremendous blessing, and that sort of validates, you know, the real meaning of what I'm supposed to be doing. And really, probably the highlight of my relatively short career on Wall Street is sharing my testimony, having a positive response and an ongoing dialogue with the woman that I worked with, who sort of mentored me, and she's now out of the business, but we're still very close, and that was one of the most rewarding times of my career. Failures, you know, I have a temper. I'd like to think that I'm not, you know, I certainly don't fly off with curse words and throw phones at people and things, but do people see me get upset? Yeah. And is that a good witness? You know, if I'm just looking like the person next to me, no. And so that is something that I'm constantly trying to work. I'm that way by nature, and being on a trading floor doesn't help me. So, you know, that's something that I've found the need to work on. I really pray about, you know, as we all have struggles, that's where I've sort of found myself needing to be more and more, is praying about those areas to, you know, to use them as opportunities to witness and to honor the Lord.
Thanks. Nelson, could you share a specific opportunity you've had to witness at work?
Yes, I think the best opportunity I've had was with one of my ex-bosses. Essentially, this is a guy who is definitely, I think he's ethnically Jewish, but I don't know how much he believes. And essentially, he was a guy who really was interested in understanding kind of truth. He's almost like Pilate in some sense, you know, a very powerful man. But, you know, he kind of wanted to understand truth. And then when Jesus says, "I have the truth," he kind of was like, what is truth? He was like, whoa, kind of off the hook. So this guy was kind of the same way. And he definitely, I guess, liked the way I worked. And he liked when I'd argue with him on other matters that didn't, you know, relate to faith. But he knew I was a Christian. I was pretty open with him with that. And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, whether it was after the World Trade Center or different scenarios, I mean, he would definitely talk to me about my faith. And, you know, I was actually shocked. Recently told me, but read the book of Romans, which I was like, whoa, the book of Romans. It's a great book. I mean, you know, but that's, so I mean, definitely, I think he's been, you know, I think he was one of the best opportunities I had to missionize with somebody. And I think a lot of it came down to just, and I would stress this for everybody. I mean, one thing, we're doing a good job or working hard at what you do. I mean, you will come in the respect of other people. At that point, they'll take you, you know, maybe more seriously with your faith as well. And this is a guy, you know, the Lord is very merciful to me and enabled me to actually, I guess, semi-impress a guy in my work. And so he actually took me more serious when I was talking about faith. So very happy about that.
Inga, question for you. Are there any ministry opportunities other than directly witnessing to coworkers that have come out of your experience in finance, whether you've maybe helped out with financial planning for nonprofits or situations in which you've managed people differently because you're a Christian or because you've made strategic decisions differently because of your faith, anything like that?
So ministries outside of work or ministries?
Oh, no, just ministry. I would say ministry, or I should say maybe a way in which your faith has transformed your work. The way you either, like I said, manage people, what you do outside of work, I mean, as far as directly using your financial experience for the Christian world, or maybe differences in way, if you've made strategic decisions at work, that maybe your faith has influenced what decision you've made.
Sure. I think that my faith has maybe influenced some of the ways I manage people that work for me a little bit. It's very easy. Every day I'm evaluated by numbers, and every day, as I'm sure many of you are in here, I look at a P&L and I figure if I'm up or down, and sometimes by the hour I look at that number. And it's very easy to see people as a means to an end, and you think, like, plug that hole, pick up that phone, do that job. And if I weren't a Christian, I think I would be awful in that regard. I'm not good as it is, but I think if I weren't a Christian, I would be dreadful. And something that I started doing about a year ago is I started praying for my colleagues, like really praying for people that I work with. And as a result, people that I would be harder on, or I would be more critical of, because I pray for them, even though you want to be judgmental and you feel that tendency welling up within you, there's something that when you start to pray for somebody, you start to really care about them and be invested in them, and you think, my goodness, this is a life, this is a soul here. And so I think that my approach to them has changed because of that, and I show people that I work, or that I have working around me and for me, more grace in that regard. And I pray and I hope that I've never had an opportunity where there can be an outright event of mercy or grace, but I hope and I pray that in the day-to-day, minute-by-minute time where maybe I could throw them under the bus, or maybe, you know, and I choose not to, I pray that that does manifest some grace that maybe shows a little bit of God's grace.
Thanks. Matt, I was wondering if you could maybe share a specific witnessing opportunity you've had at work.
Well, I shared a little bit with the woman that worked next to me. I had an opportunity to sort of explain to her my faith, and she called herself a nominal Christian and kind of used the term actually with as though she had a little conviction, but I used it as an opportunity to share with her the gospel, basically, you know, and I basically just laid it out in you know, a couple of sentences that, you know, and really, because she sat next to me and really saw some of my flaws early on in my career, was able to share with her grace and my need for it and how we're all in need of it. And so that was a neat opportunity and an ongoing one, like I said. And then just recently, actually, my current boss, and I've just moved to Deutsche Bank about 6 weeks ago, was giving me a ride home, actually, from a client event. And we sort of know each other, live in the area, and he knows that I'm a Christian, but doesn't really know what that means. And had an opportunity in the car on the way home to share with him how, you know, we sort of came from similar backgrounds, grew up as a child. I did Catholic, and my parents left the Catholic Church when I was young, and he still is. And we went to the same Catholic high school. And so I was able to share with him, you know, why we left and what the difference is and how it's not about what church you go to. It's about Christ and what he's done. And it was really just the last 5 minutes of the ride. But it's neat that now I'm starting this job with him, and my wife is close with his. And so I know there's just going to be more opportunity. And I can really see that God has brought me to this place for more than just a paycheck, but to, you know, hopefully change people's lives.
Thanks. Nelson, I was wondering if you could share maybe a specific, like, habit you've exhibited or a situation or a behavior pattern that you've shown that has led to more opportunity to discuss your Christian walk, whether it's just something people look and say, man, that's kind of strange that you do that, and ask you more questions. And also, for those of you who came to Redeemer last Sunday and heard Tim's sermon, I was curious if you think you tend to err more on the side of being too loving or being too offensive in sharing your Christian testimony. Since he asked that of us, I thought I'd ask it of the panelists.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually reasonably open to my faith. I think initially when I first started working on Wall Street, I think one of the things that really, one of the behaviors, you know, I'm not a big drinker. I'm not even necessarily because I'm Christian, just because I just don't like to drink that much. But, you know, that was able to lead me pretty quickly, where people would say that they see I was not drinking with them, even when I was, you know, when I first started working in Wall Street, the guys were like, hey, we'll take out, grab some beers, you know, welcome the team or whatever. I mean, and I remember a guy like orange juice, where they're like, who is this guy? You know, so, and then other opportunities would come up. I mean, obviously, there'd be like bachelor parties or whatever, and, you know, I'd hang out with the guys, maybe at the bar just for a little while. Then I'd find out, you know, they're going to do something afterwards, and, you know, I would be like, hey, I got to get out of here. They're, you know, at first, I think it's maybe a coincidence, and they start realizing, hey, this guy never does some of the things that we do. And I think at that point, they certainly come up and say, so why, are you like religious or something? Like, you know, how can we do it? And so, you know, I was able to witness that way. You know, other things, just things like, you know, if you're playing like softball with the guys, you know, that they would say, hey, you know, you want to play with us Sunday? And I'm like, hey, what? You know, I have to go after church, essentially. So pretty much at that point, they kind of know you go to church. So, you know, I think it was a lot of behavior. But initially, I think the biggest thing was just the fact that I wasn't going to, you know, some of the clubs with them, and maybe even not drinking. They're a little bit surprised by that. But like I said, that was not because I'm a Christian. That was just not a big drinker. So what was the second part of your question?
My questions are really long and difficult. I'm trying to give them a challenge. The second part of the question was, according to Tim's sermon last Sunday, do you think you tend to err more on the side of being too loving or being too offensive in sharing your Christian testimony?
I mean, first, myself personally, I think I'm pretty moderate. I think as a trader, I'm a pretty intense person, and I definitely I'm willing to debate with people about it, about many things. But I think in general, the topic itself is, in some sense, very, you know, in your face. I mean, obviously, I mean, the gospel is pretty much, you know, salvation is one thing, the blood of Jesus Christ. And I think that alone, that's about as black and white as you get. I mean, there is nothing more black and white than that. And I think, you know, initially when you start discussing these issues, it's going to naturally become somewhat, you know, a little more aggressive in the sense of, like, you know, because, you know, especially coming from a very relativistic society like New York City. That being said, although I am a pretty intense debater, I think I am pretty kind at the same time. But the one thing, you know, like I would like to mention, I think being very aggressive is not necessarily, or being almost offensive. You know, on one level, it seems bad. On the other hand, guys like Billy Graham were kind of that way. I mean, Billy Graham's obviously a great man, a great, you know, evangelist. I mean, Paul's the same way. But when you see what they speak, I mean, Paul says, I preach Christ, Christ crucified, you know, and raised for the forgiveness of sins. I mean, that's not, once again, because the gospel is so black and white, if you are kind of, you know, essentially true to the gospel, you're going to have to be somewhat offensive. I mean, you can't really mince words there. I mean, it's not like, well, you know, it's kind of close to three. No, it's three. That's it. You know? I mean, I think by its very nature, it will be a little offensive. But, you know, that being said, if you're going to yelling match with somebody, no one's going to really listen to you. So I don't know if I got off topic there a little bit, maybe.
Excellent answer. Inga, I was curious if you see any parallels between what you feel you're talented in trading and your spiritual gifts, and also whether you've maybe seen some areas that the Lord is challenging you to grow spiritually that the trading has actually helped.
Yeah, I think there are similarities. I'm not really sure what my spiritual gifts are. I'm not sure. I can't remember all the spiritual gifts exactly that were listed, but I think that there are some similarities. I think that the places that I like to serve in the church are the things that I'm naturally good at in my job. So one thing that my business teaches me to do is to trust God, because it's very much, I feel like a fisherman a lot of times. Like every day is a new challenge, and every day I have to go and catch fish. And I actually, I don't really like living like that. I don't like the stress and the anxiety that produces. And I think naturally, well, I don't know what I'd naturally do, but it wouldn't be this. Like it wouldn't be this day-to-day anxiety. It wouldn't be this treadmill that I feel like I'm on. Certainly when I was a student at Wheaton, I never dreamed that I'd be doing this. But I have learned that God is faithful day in and day out. And it's a funny thing, but I feel like I've seen his hand in my work, so that he's taught me to trust him for tomorrow and for the next day and for the, you know, years to come. And I tend to worry naturally. And my job is a place where you can get laid off tomorrow. And I could blow up a huge account for the firm, and that would stink. And those are things that keep me up at night. And the Lord has time and time again been faithful to me. I can't tell you how many times I felt like there's a big fish out there that I need to catch. And I've prayed, like, help me catch this fish. And I've seen fish caught that never should have been caught. And I've seen trades get done that I think shocked people around me. So certainly God has taught me to trust him. And it's still hard for me to trust God. I still naturally fear. But I feel like he's used my job on Wall Street to develop me in that area. So yes, very much so.
Excellent. Well, Matt or Nelson, do either of you feel like you have anything to share about that same question? Strongly? I'll give you the out if you don't want to comment. I can see you're listening well. No. I have to tease him a little bit since we're good friends. I have to be nicer to the other two panelists, so I have less grace with them, perhaps. Well, the question was, what overlaps are there in what you do as a trader and your spiritual strengths, and conversely, as the patterns of trading and the lifestyle of trading, how have they challenged you to spiritually grow specifically?
I mean, one, I actually really agree with Inga here. I mean, it is a reasonably stressful job. I mean, as you guys all know, if you're on a trading floor, I mean, you know, you're pretty much stripped pretty bare in a lot of ways. I mean, there's not a lot of mincing words. Everyone has a P&L, and P&Ls are looked at every second, essentially, you know, and your risk profile and everything else looked at pretty, it's kind of, like I said, it's pretty hard to mince words. I mean, like, you're down X. You can't always say, well, but, you know, yeah, but I mean, my name's Nelson. What's your name? And I mean, you're kind of out, essentially, you know. You know, so it is pretty, it does strip you down pretty bare. I mean, so definitely, you know, every day you come to work, you know, you face a challenge. But the good thing is when you're in the Lord, you realize once again, you know, like, you know, boast in the Lord and nothing else, essentially. So, I mean, it's hard, but when you're in the Lord, one, you know, similar to Inga, you know, I prayed many times when I've had situations where I was under a lot of stress, and, I'd be struggling to get to bed, you know, and certainly the Lord did alleviate the stress, and oftentimes, you know, great outcomes happened. You know, at the same time, one of the great things is because you are in the Lord, at the end, no matter how, even if you're getting blasted, I mean, it's still, you can sit back and go, you know what? At the end, the worst thing can happen, I lose my job, you know what I mean? The Lord still loves me, so that's, you know what I mean? It is definitely the ultimate insurance policy. I mean, if you're talking about risk management, I mean, it's kind of a bad way to think about it, but it really is, I mean, so What was the second part? I mean, these things are unbelievable.
I think you pretty well covered. I was just saying, also, putting down the mic. Yeah, no, I was also saying, if there's any spiritual strengths that you have that you think have really, that are parallel to your gifts, what you're talented at in trading. Maybe a more difficult question, but... We'll move on. Matt, what initially led you into finance, and how can you see the Lord working in the process?
This is an interesting one. All I ever wanted to be was G.I. Joe. And you probably wouldn't, because my wife was attending here 12 years ago, but Sarah and Rachel, they sing once in a while. My wife is Rachel, and she was attending here a while ago, 12 years ago, like I said, and I was a cadet at West Point. She was a few years older than me. And I used to mock her. She was working at Bankers Trust. And I used to put her down and say, how can you enrich? She was working in the trust and estate department. How can you enrich already wealthy people? You know, there's no honor in finance. I was an arrogant 21-year-old. And I had zero interest. All I wanted to do was be a career Army officer. And we got married right after. I don't know. You know, she had a lot of faith to walk down the aisle with me. And we're in the Army for a few years, and we had our first child. And as soon as I held my daughter, I said, I got to get out of the Army. And I said, I wanted to go to law school or business school. And I said, business school probably is the broadest thing, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And as I started to look into it, I got interested in finance. And we had friends, obviously, because we grew up in the area in finance. And so I started to, you know, read the journal and pick up finance textbooks and pull out my old economics textbooks, and got really interested in it. And I was kind of ashamed to admit it to my wife and to my family, but that's sort of what sparked my interest. And you know, and then I went to business school, and I still thought maybe I wanted to be a consultant or, you know, go into management. And I just got more and more attracted. Actually, it's a really long story, but the Lord's hand in it through the whole thing. One, because anytime you find yourself doing something that you otherwise, you know, would have done 180 degrees. The opposite thing, and you're praying, you're prayerful about it, you know that you're in the Lord's will, and you're, you know, He wants you to be doing that. And so that was obvious there. But before I went to business school, I was getting out of the Army, and I had two kids at this point, and, you know, told my wife I was going to be delivering pizzas for 3 months before I went to business school. And I was looking for something to do, and I said, well, if I could just get some kind of internship somewhere, I don't know what that would be. And another person that attends this church used to work at Goldman, and she said, send me your resume, and I'll send it off to somebody, a good friend of mine who's a partner at Goldman. And so I shot it off, and I was, you know, a month or two from getting out of the Army, didn't know what I was going to do. And she sent it off to her friend, and her friend saw it and sent it down to HR, and the HR people must have thought, oh, well, a partner sent this to us, so we got to find something for this guy to do. And I was in Arizona, you know, kicking around an Army post, and they called me up and said, you know, come out here, we want to interview you. And so I flew out, and they interviewed me, and I actually helped train the newly hired analysts for a summer before I went to business school, and that was my intro to Wall Street. And as soon as I walked through the doors, I said, this is what I want to do. I didn't know what exactly I wanted to do, but... No, I wanted to do it, so that's it.
Thanks. Inga, this is actually a Jensen-invented question, so if you don't like this question, blame him. How would you finish this sentence? My work has redemptive value because...
This is actually pretty easy. My work has redemptive value because I know that I bring salt and light into a trading pit where there would not be salt and light if I weren't there. And it also has redemptive value because I interact with 50 clients and I bring the message of the gospel to them and they wouldn't otherwise see it. And you might ask, well, do I mention it every day to them? And no, I don't. But I look for opportunities. I try to find places to be different. I don't come with an announcement like, hi, my name's Inga and I'm a Christian. I don't do that. That would be odd. But I try to find areas where I can witness. And I also don't drink very much at all, and being in sales in Wall Street, that's kind of unusual. It's actually a smart thing to do if you're a woman on Wall Street, but beyond that, it stands out. So I think that kind of draws people's attention as to why maybe I don't. And the curious thing is, I think that people know that I'm a Christian, even though I never mention it, and my behavior's not always that great, so I'm really flattered when somebody suspects that. And I have this guy that, a fellow that's pretty senior that I work with, and I noticed that he kept hanging around to talk to me sometimes, and I was like, great, what does he want to talk about? It's probably no good. And the other day he took me aside, and you know, on a training floor, you don't really step off the desk very often. That's kind of a big event. He's like, I have to talk to you. And I'm thinking, oh no, we have some political issue. He said, I saw The Passion last night. And I'm thinking, why is he telling me this? and I just sat there and trying to figure out exactly how to handle the conversation. And I think in this particular man's case that his struggle is that he's attracted to the message of the Lord, but he's struggles with being a successful New York Wall Street guy and feeling like he's identifying with those crazy fundamentalists. So we talk through that issue a lot. But the bottom line is I'm there, and he can talk to me, and I don't know if I weren't there who he'd talk to. So I feel like in the interaction that I have with people whose lives seem awfully dark sometimes, I feel like my work has redemptive value. And the challenge I face is that it would be easy, I think, to not be salt because the pressure to conform is very great. And I pray often before I go to work that I will exhibit the Lord in what I do that day in some way, in some shape. And also, I don't know if you know this, but on Bloomberg, if you go Bible Go, the Bible comes up. And so a lot of times on...
really?
I learned that one dark moment. I just felt like I needed to, you know, read some good scriptures. So I hit Bible Go. So a lot of times you could literally, the whole Bible's there, and it's pretty thorough, and you can search. And so it has a verse of the day too. So I read the verse of the day, and like I write it in my little notebook, and I try to kind of be meditating on that scripture while I'm making all my sales calls and while I'm, you know, trading and stuff. So I believe that, you know, the Word of God is living and active, sharper than a double-edged sword. So I feel like if I'm meditating on that scripture and I'm interacting with secular people at the same time, there's something greatly redemptive in that.
Wow, I feel I learned something there. Now I... Thank you for sharing the Bible Go. I didn't realize that Bloomberg had all of Bible. I just went to like Bible Gateway Online or something. Here it was in Bloomberg all the whole time. Actually, Ingla, if you wouldn't mind sharing how you ended up getting into finance initially.
So I went to Wheaton College, and I don't know if many of you are familiar with Wheaton, but it's not really a great feeder for Wall Street. It's small... It's trained many missionaries, and you know, I'm honored to be one of their graduates, but it definitely doesn't feed Wall Street. So when I was a senior at Wheaton, I knelt by my bed one night and I prayed, Lord, if you get me into the University of Chicago's finance, you know, MBA program next year, then I will serve you with my career. And I got in. And I got an MBA when I started Chicago when I was 21, and I was a pretty young graduate from business school, and I'll never forget that prayer. And there's been times when I didn't do a good job of carrying my end of the bargain of that, and there's been times when I don't think I served him very well, but I would say his grace has been great, and that he brought me back to him, and I've never forgotten that prayer. And so sometimes, like in the midst of some very stressful moments, I've remembered, you know what? Lord, you brought me into this crazy business. You brought me to working in bonds. And you're going to bring me through this moment. So
thank you. Well, Nelson, here's a nice, difficult question for you. Are there any specific ways in which you would like the manner in which financial markets are run to change in order to bring about more justice, encourage honesty, relieve economic oppression, etc.? I just thought I'd torture him a little bit here. The reason I'm bringing this up is we've been talking about this in some of our discussion groups and our monthly meetings and how, and we actually just recently, about a month ago, had a great entrepreneurs forum that was attended by about 80 really top professionals. And we were discussing the differences in the way we could transform the way for-profits and non-profits were run. So I was just curious, and ways we can just transform the world through changing different systems and everything. So I just wondered if the panelists had any great input on that.
I mean, it's a pretty difficult question, obviously. I mean, but you know, the first thing I would say about I know a lot of people complain about CEO pay. I'm definitely one who you know, coming from Wall Street too, it seemed like I would not. But I think it's kind of offensive when you lay off 10,000 employees and then the CEO runs a company to the ground, gets fired, gets a golden parachute of $100 million or something of this nature. To me, it's a little bit unjust. That's probably my first thing with for-profits. And the world's and for worldwide, it's a very difficult question. I mean, certainly if you look at the wage for labor worldwide, it's obviously a good deal lower than for the U.S., for the most part. And that being said, I mean, so there's certainly a lot of things that are tariffed or, there are certain provisions made so that it's hard for laborers to come into our country. Obviously, the immigration in Mexico right now, I mean, that's a huge issue in America. And it's a very hard question. I mean, really, one level it is unjust in the sense of certainly, if you're a poor guy in Brazil or a poor guy in, or wherever your favorite, in your country is, you should be able to have a competitive way to actually work in the world. That being said, it is also the U.S. government's job to actually protect U.S. citizens. So, I mean, in some sense, having something like sugar, for example, obviously it's a hugely, if you look at the U.S. sugar market versus the world sugar markets, it's obviously the marks are pretty unaligned. But I mean, so I don't know. It's a very difficult question.
Definitely. I don't know if anyone has any. Anyone else have any great insights? Matt, how have you personally handled the tendency in trading to make money the ultimate goal? And how do you view the ownership of the money you do make? How much in your own heart does it belong to you or to God? And how do you decide where and how much to give? Another difficult question.
Okay, the first part, tendency to make money the ultimate goal. That's a tough one because, within the bounds of what's right morally and obviously, not compromising any values, I don't think it's wrong to want to make as much as you can for the firm and, obviously your compensation is tied to that. On the other hand, I think that the good test for it is, and a good any day, anyone on a trading floor knows, right? You have great days and you have bad days. And if you are noticeably in a different mood on the days where you don't do as much business, then your heart probably needs to be adjusted. And quite honestly, I find myself struggling with that, but that's a good barometer for me. And we'll get to this later. This is a bit of a foretaste. But when I come home at the end of the day and my wife can tell, that's how I know usually. Because I could sort of try to fake myself out and say, oh, no, I'm actually in an okay mood. But she can tell. And I know the business that I did that day. And so that's a good sort of barometer for me. And praying, really. I mean, we've missed it a lot, but I think that's really the answer to a lot of the issues we struggle with, to pray that because we're in such a, not just a country and city, but, in the financial world, it's very easy to get sucked into that and to take for granted just certain lifestyle things, the way you spend your money day to day, even the lunches that you buy. I try not to, partake in the $25 lunches, which can be normal just because you think that could feed a family of four for a week or so in many countries.
The second half, how do you view the ownership of the money you make? How much in your own heart does it belong to you or to God?
The easy part. But obviously, everything we have is God's. So tithing is an important part of that. And, not strict tithing as in 10%, but tithing so that it hurts, so that you realize that one, you're giving something up, and two, it all belongs to God anyway, and you really should be giving him the first fruits and not, the last fruit, the leftovers. So I think that's an important thing. And again, praying where to give. There are different mentalities. It could be controversial, but we pray about how we give and where we give, whether it's to, within the church or to different ministries. My wife's brother is in ministry or, what have you, but you definitely need to pray about that, especially, when it comes around bonus time and, it's a big decision to make and it's important. So, and it does belong to the Lord. So it's hard stuff.
Thanks. Ingun, I actually was wondering if you could reflect on the same question. Oh, sure. Actually, I'll just repeat the first part. How have you personally handled the tendency in trading to make money the ultimate goal?
I think, obviously, my job is very much measured on production, but my life, clearly my life isn't. My life is measured on my relationship to Jesus and how how well he flows through me in my life. But at the same time, I'm a quantitative person, and I think that the great thing about money is that it's cut and dry. You know, the saying that if you look at someone's checkbook, you know where their heart is. And not only that, but I feel as though it's very hard to be away from the Lord and be in sin and be tithing. I mean, that's pretty much doesn't happen. So I think it's kind of a good barometer of where your heart is. So obviously, I believe in tithing to the core of my being. And I believe in writing the first check, the first fruit, you know, and I believe in praying diligently about that. And, you know, obviously tithing is 10% of the gross at a minimum. And so that definitely curbs your behavior, because I think that when you start to give, it feeds your soul in such a way that you want to keep giving. So that, to me, that's the most important thing. It's hard for me because I'm very much evaluated, like I'm sure all of you are, on my profit at the end of the day. And I really think about that on a regular basis. And I kind of do it Nelson too. I'm like, oh, well, you know, if I get fired tomorrow, you know, thank God I'm, you know, a child of the kings and it'll be okay. But also, one of the games I play with myself, and I was even doing this last night, is sometimes I wonder if it has too much of a part of my heart or a part of my identity. And I think, okay, if I had to walk away from it tomorrow, is that okay? And honestly, there's many moments when it's not, and I don't want to walk away from it tomorrow. I like it. I like the future expectation of earning. And I think that if the Lord called me to live in a hut in a remote country, I wouldn't want to do that. But I pray and I ask God and I say, am I willing to give my career to you? You know, it always was yours. You gave it to me to begin with. And so I pray that prayer all the time. And I pray that from the times when I don't want to give up my career, where I feel like it's a little bit of an idol, and when I say my career, I mean my income, I pray in that second that God would take it and that he would again be on the throne of my heart. So I go through that prayer often, and it's not just something where I do once and I say, okay, now I'm free. Now I've given you my career and I'm never going to want to make it an idol again. I do it all the time. And I think you have to hold it lightly. And I'm serious when I say that I have to be willing to walk away from it tomorrow, even though I don't get paid till next February, if necessary. And if the Lord called me to do that, I'd be willing to do it. So I pray that prayer all the time.
And Nelson, if you could also answer the first half of that question. You kind of already touched on it a little bit in saying that you always at the end of the day feel like, well, you know, the worst thing that happens is you lose your job. But do you have any other reflections on how you've personally handled the tendency in trading to make money the ultimate goal?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it is a pretty important question. Just, I mean, it should be for anyone in trading, because you are so, because this is a money-based business. I mean, you are valued by money. And for me personally, because when I decided to go to Wall Street, I mean, mainly, I was a Christian, but I wasn't really walking my faith so much. And as, right after I made the decision to go to Wall Street, the Lord really had a great deal of mercy on me, as he has to everybody. And I just was much more active in, you know, in seeking the Lord and reading the Bible. But mainly my goal was to go to Wall Street like a lot of people and make a lot of money and be done with it already, you know. So, and then I started reading the Bible, and I read the parable in Luke 12 where there's the rich farmer who has this huge, you know, windfall, has a great crop, and is kind of asking himself, hey, what am I going to do with my life now? You know, I got plenty to do, I got plenty of life to live, plenty of money to live on it, and that's what a great gig. And, of course, at that point, God calls him a fool, and it was the last part of that he was calling him a fool for. So, I mean, yeah, for me, I mean, I think the biggest thing that did money and the Lord has done for me in the sense of, yeah, I mean, the main thing is it goes back to just when I'm getting blasted. I mean, I look to the Lord. I mean, it sounds kind of, like I said, it sounds like an insurance policy, but it's not in the end, like, because in the end, like, you're feeling terrible, and in the end, like, the Lord really has a great deal of mercy on you, and you definitely, it's pretty amazing, because, I mean, at that point, you know, you're looking around the trading room, and, you know, you're kind of like, oh, man, I must have the worst day of anyone at the desk, you know, and at the same time, you know, the Lord still loves you, and it's pretty awesome. So, but I agree with, you know, both Inga and Matt about tithing. You certainly can tell when your heart's on money too much, when you're like, I don't know about this last check. You know, there's a bonus check. I mean, the salary is one thing. You know, the bonus check's a different story, you know. I think it's just amazing to see just the grace of the Lord in a situation where I'm getting, you know, blasphemy when I'm having a great day. I mean, you realize just the kind of triviality of it as well. You know, oh, great, I had a huge day. And then you go back and say, who really cares? You know, like, you know, I'm glad I have good days because I do enjoy the job. But when you compare it to the Lord, it's just kind of not such a big deal, you know.
And Nelson, if you could also answer this question, what method do you use for prioritizing your quiet time with the Lord? And how do you integrate praying without ceasing and reading the Bible into your workday? Now we know about Bible Go, so we're more prepared. But
yeah, I mean, certainly in the morning and when I get back from work, I never read the Bible. You know, certainly, like Inga, I mean, certainly I'm praying during the day. You know, like, you know, whether it's, you know, like, well, I'm in a bad situation, or you know, like, my goodness, how did I get caught here? Or it's like, do I have any outs left? I mean, you know, all the cards are out, and I'm like, my goodness, it's a bad hand. But other times, just kind of what Amanda's saying, just kind of walking, Lord. I mean, I'll be walking to grab my lunch, and I'll just be like, you know, just Lord, be with me, you know, and then not even so much for my trading in, but just, you know, I just want to, you know Lord better, and you know, certainly I spend a good deal of time praying, you know, the same kind of thing that although I want to do all my job, certainly that I yearn to know the Lord better, and to know His grace and His love.
And Matt, if you could also answer that question, how you found the ability to prioritize your quiet time with the Lord, and how do you integrate praying without ceasing into your day?
Prioritizing my quiet time, found it most profitable when I'm using a daily guide. If I'm just sort of saying, I'll pick up the Bible and read something, it's not as I'm not as consistent, and it's just not as profitable. So I've benefited from the use of you know, if not the daily bread, but things like that. I was much better at one point, and I haven't been in recent months, of getting up and making sure I spend 20 minutes reading and praying in the morning. More recently, I've done it at night before I go to bed. But I think, still in the morning, I'll always say, you know, just a few minutes worth of prayer before I take off in my car. But it is, I think, more profitable and more fresh in your mind when you have that time in the morning, or has been for me when I have it in the morning. Although it's amazing how, you know, soon after 9:30, it's just all numbers in your head, and you know, praying without ceasing. You know, I agree with Nelson that it's just those short prayers in the middle of the day. Sometimes it's for someone that's been on my mind, you know, a family member or friend. At other times, it's, you know, Lord, help me to control my temper, to be Jesus to this person, you know, to not get caught up in the moment. So those short prayers are, I think, just as valuable and heard just as much as, you know, your quiet time in the morning or at night or what have you.
Thanks. Inga, what specific strategies have you developed to keep your testimony intact when faced with pressure to join in questionable activities, both at the office and when going out after work? Swearing, heavy drinking, strip clubs, etc. And if you have any specific advice to give to especially people who are new in the industry.
Sure. I think one thing, being a woman, actually this is much easier because there's pressure, of course, but there's a different kind of pressure. I don't have to be one of the guys. I'm obviously not, and I'm never going to be. So it's fine if I don't. And I don't really drink very much, and that helps. That's huge. It's kind of a small thing, but I think that would be a very, very bad way to keep my, you know, my witness. So I also work on a veritable construction site in terms of bad language. I would never allow a child in my workplace. Like, it really is really bad language. And It's easy, I think, to swear if you're around bad language all the time, and I try very hard not to, and I think that that's a pretty big witness in and of itself. And I just memorize the verses, like, out of the abundance of the heart, you know, the mouth speaks. So I try to have verses in my head that confront those behaviors. As far as strip clubs go, I wouldn't do it anyways. I think it would be very classless, so that's not really an issue so much. I think somewhere in Wall Street handbooks, it says to be successful, you have to drink a lot and party a lot and, you know, have illicit relationships. And I don't, and I'm successful. So I think that if you have the Lord behind you, I mean, it sounds cliche, but I know it not to be. Like, there's victory in that, and that not conforming actually can be a big victory. And also, I'm not tired very often. I mean, I certainly don't get very much sleep, but I'm not nearly as tired as my colleagues that have bad drinking problems and who stay out late. And so I think I have more energy than they do, and my mind is sharper. And also, I don't say things that I regret, and they say, I mean, I do, but not to the same extent that I would if I drink a lot. But there's a sharpness to me because my mind is sober much more of the time, and I think that helps a lot.
And Nelson, if you have any specific advice to give to people and strategies on how to deal with any difficult after-work situations.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what Inga said, I definitely agree with. You know, I'm not a girl, never will be, but I do agree being a woman is definitely somewhat advantageous, you know, in one respect and not in others. I mean, certainly you're not one of the boys, so you don't have to worry about it. Like, the boys are not going to go up to, you know, a girl and say, hey, join us, you know, at a certain club or whatever. That's that'd be pretty bad. You'd probably lose your job for almost certainly. Yeah, the main thing is you just have to really, you know, obviously pray about it, you know, and just you really have to be very, you know, very cognizant of it. Because as Inga said, I mean, a lot of people on Wall Street believe, you know, essentially to be successful, you really have to go out drinking with the buddy, you know, the guys, and, you know, hang out with salespeople at places, you know, like strip clubs. I mean, I had a guy in my office today. He said, you know, I prefer money to sleep. And mainly what he was saying is he was out last night blasted. In the last three nights, he was out, you know, pretty late at night until 3 a.m. or so. But, you know, he was meeting big clients and other very, very important people on Wall Street. That being said, you know, you don't need those people. So in the end, you know, you just have to be really steadfast, because I mean, the guys will definitely be a little surprised, you know, if you're like, hey, let's go to this place. I got to get out of here. You know, I mean, I think certainly if you're married, I think that might be a little bit of an advantage too, because they always kind of understand. They're like, oh, like, I can't the ring. But you know, yeah. But if not, I mean, they definitely. And just be clever about it. I know I went to visit a very important contact of mine in Chicago, and the guy was like, hey, he said, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, oh, no, because I know the guy, because he's like, I thought you were married, you know, and I was like, oh, no, I'm not married. He's like, hey, we should, you know, obviously the activities of the women, and I was just like, oh. Force, I noticed, I noticed that day that, I mean, the Wizards were playing the Bulls in the playoffs last year, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm a huge Wizards fan, you know, coming from growing up in Virginia. I was like, hey, let's go watch the Wizards Bulls game. They're like, okay. I mean, if you want to do that, I mean, we can go here. We can do all the other three things as well. I was like, nah, let's go watch the Bulls Wizards game. And he was, ah, cool. You know, I'll find a good sports bar for you. And I was, so yeah, you got to be pretty steadfast. And I mean, certainly pray about it. The Lord will lead you out of temptation. I mean, certainly, you know, Jesus tells you how to pray. He says, lead me out of temptation. So definitely, I would suggest that.
And Matt, if you have any specific advice to give, and also reflecting on. I wanted to have a little bit of the dialogue, the whole woman versus men versus married versus single. So if you have any specific insights in that as well.
One last night, actually. I was out to dinner with a client. Yeah, no joke. Out to dinner with a client last night, and he invited a friend up. And I know that he's single, and I sort of know the way he rolls. And his friend shows up that I don't know, and he's not wearing a wedding band, but he walks in, and he's like out of a movie. South Philly boy. And so we finish up dinner around 8 o'clock, and they're talking throughout dinner how they're going to go out clubbing, and I find out over the course of dinner that the guy who's not wearing a wedding band that I thought was single is actually married and left his wife and two children, you know, back in Philly, and he's ready. He says, none of us are married tonight, and, you know, we're going to go out, and Paul says to flee evil, so you can't even go there. You just say, but you know, the wedding band thing does work, but it's amazing, and I'm really repulsed by the number of people, you know, men that say, oh, what does it matter, you know, nobody's gonna, it's evil, and you do need to pray about it, and you need to confront it, you know. And I don't get into discussions about the morality of it and start quoting scripture verses, although I will if I need to, but yeah, I just honestly, you know, if you want to get into specific tactics, not so much strategies now, but, you know, ways to combat it. I order a car before I go out so that it's waiting for me at the restaurant, and I'm not free to go wander with them. I have something, you know, look, I have a car getting me at 9 o'clock. You know, I'll grab a quick drink with you in the bar after dinner, but I gotta go. And that's exactly what I did last night. So I find that helpful. And yeah, and praying before I go out. Never think that you're invincible. Always rely on the Lord's strength and not your own. And so on my way to dinner, I was praying, you know, Lord, make me strong, make me wise. And those are just a couple of things.
Thanks. Yeah, I was actually really appreciate specific tactics specifically, because sometimes it's those little tips that can keep you out of trouble in different situations. Also, someone had submitted a question for Inga. I often hear that women on Wall Street have to be better and work harder than their male counterparts to get ahead. How accurate is this view based on your own experience as a female trader? And also, of course, tie this into your Christian walk. We're talking about the advantage of, as far as not having to be one of the boys, as far as your testimony. But if you have any other reflections?
Sure. I don't know. There's definite advantages to being a woman, and there's definite disadvantages. An advantage is, like I said earlier, I don't have some of the pressures that men. I think I have advantages in sales being a woman over a man. I just do. Sometimes I think it's easier for a woman to charm an account than a man. So, and I think I'm sometimes more empathetic. But as far as working harder, there may be some truth to that at the earlier, at the more junior levels. I think that women have to maybe. I was one time with an account in Texas, outside of Houston, and I was there with a trader, and the trader was Asian, and we were talking about some very quantitative things, and the account over dinner said, you know, I know that Asian men are good at math, but are blonde women really good at math? And, you know, I actually sold that guy a lot of bonds later. So that, I mean, you have to have a very thick skin. I mean, a very thick skin. And I actually don't naturally, but I've developed one over the last couple of years. So there's been times when I think that I don't have a lot of credibility because people think, you know, there's biases against, you know, what I think people think blonde women can't do some of the you know, other things, but also that has advantages too because you can be a little bit more disarming. So it's a double-edged sword. I think there's a lot of advantages to being a woman. I think you take people off guard. I had one when I started in sales. I had to cold call people, and it was so difficult. I still have to do this from time to time. And, you know, they will swear at you. They will hang up on you, and you will call them back, and you will get these people to buy bonds one way or another. I've had people who are very good customers scream at me. And I think being a woman, you can just kind of like, I had one just vile customer a week ago, and I was like, listen, I'm like, you're being mean, and I think I need you to stop. And, you know, I was able to approach it in a way that a guy really couldn't. So I think that I could never say, that being a woman has held me back. But it's challenged me sometimes. And then there's something else. You know, this is just a fact in my job. Like, there are men that have less than honorable motives. And especially when I was more junior, I think people thought that maybe I was desperate enough where, you know, I would sleep with them because I needed to get ahead. Well, you know, obviously that I've never felt like I needed to do that. I've never needed to compromise to get ahead because, you know, I feel like I have the hand of the Almighty on me, so I don't need to do that. But I've faced some scary situations that I don't think a man would have to face. So there's been times, and thank God that I've had the Lord to protect me, but there's been times when things have been dicey and scary, very scary. And that's a challenge that men don't have. So,
well, we wanted to take a 2-minute stretch break, so get up for a second, just about 2 minutes.